to be a shir on the first mission in Pirkei Avot. You didn't get Charlie on the... I'll have to get it on another... Mark will get it. I'll do it again for you with nobody around. I can do it just as well. Yes, you're right. Okay. That's okay. I can do it. I can do it in my sleep. Okay. We're going to learn a Mishnah Novos. Everybody knows the Mishnah. Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. Moshe received Torah at Sinai. Umesoro leYoshua, and he gave it to Yehoshua. He passed Torah on to Yehoshua. And here at the beginning of Pirkei Avot, we are told the order of the transmission of Torah received by Moshe at Sinai, who gave it over to Yehoshua. Yehoshua then passed it on to the Zakenim, those who lived after Yehoshua, and this also includes all of the whole period of the Shoftim, the judges, until Eli. And then the Zakenim passed Torah on to the Nevi'im, to the prophets, which begin with Shmuel. The Nevi'im transmitted Torah to the men of the Great Assembly. We've gone through 1,000 years of Jewish history. The men of the Great Assembly are those who stand at the helm of the Jewish people upon their return from the Babylonian exile. The 70 years of Galut Bavel, the 70 years of the Babylonian exile are over. First, Beis HaMikdash was in ruins. They've now begun to rebuild. The second Beit HaMikdash, the second commonwealth, is in its infancy, and the ones who lead the people are the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, the men of the Great Assembly, who are 120 great scholars, and amongst them there were Nevi'im, Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi, the last of the three prophets. There were also great people. There was Zerubbabel, Seroya, Mordechai, Bilshan, all sorts of great people. The fact is that we don't know much about all of the members of the Great Assembly. The only, aside from the few names that I mentioned now, we're also, the second mission is going to talk about Shimon HaTzadik, about 100, 150 years later, who was Mishiorei Knesset HaGadolah. He was one of the remnants, the last of the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. The Anshei Knesset HaGadolah said three things. Heim Amru Shlosha Devarim, they said three things. Hevum Metunim Badin. Be cautious, be patient when passing judgment. Don't pass judgment hastily. On its simplest level, this is being said to judges. You know, Savanut, take it easy. Haste makes waste. You have to be very patient when passing judgment. It, of course, can be talking to all of us. We're always making judgments all the time, and quite often we make hasty judgments, and then we find out that we were really all wrong. So just get your facts straight, know what it's all about, and then make decisions. V'ha'amidu talmidim haradei, Anshei Knesset HaGadolah said, you have to stand on their feet, many students. Torah has to be rebuilt. Eretz Yisrael had been in ruins for more than 50 years, 52 years, when the first Olim begin to return from Bavel. It means rebuilding all of Jewish life, and in rebuilding all of Jewish life, it means, of course, that you have to rebuild Torah. V'asu siyog la'Torah, and make a fence around Torah. Torah at times needs to be protected. It was the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah who legislated, for example, the halacha of muktzah. Now, there are things, you're not permitted to write on Shabbos, so they said, well, don't move a pen or a pencil. If you're not going to move a pen or a pencil, then you're not going to come to writing. All of the laws of muktzah were a fence around the law. And then, of course, they also legislated in all sorts of areas that were necessary to limit the social contact between Jew and non-Jew, because there were a lot of problems when Jews came back from Bavel. One of the problems, the Rambam talks about it, Jews had lost the ability to speak Lashon Kodesh. They couldn't speak Hebrew. They couldn't, Rambam describes that they couldn't say a straight sentence in Hebrew. It was a mixture of Ashdodis and all sorts of other languages, and Anshei Knesset HaGdolah therefore had to compose the Shmona Esrei so that we should all be able to daven in beautiful fashion. It's a major piece of literature, the Shmona Esrei. Not only the way it is written, but the fact that it does encompass and incorporate just about anything that any Jew might want to pray for throughout all of history. It's a major work, the Shmona Esrei. And we're going to talk a bit more about that Shmona Esrei. There was also the Jews who came back with non-Jewish wives. Non-Jewish wives. I mean, this is a serious problem. There are a number of chapters in Ezra and Nehemiah where when Ezra hears that there are Jews who have intermarried, he takes major steps in order to stop the spread, and not only stop the spread, but bring it to an end. And they had other problems. They had a lot of problems. But what's amazing is they came back with 42,000 people were the sum total of Olim that came in the first wave. They were really the dregs of Jewish society in Bavel. You know, the gangsters, the drug pushers, everybody, you know, the foreign legionnaires are the ones that came. And those foreign legionnaires, while they left, of course, the great, beautiful Babylonian Jewish community, those gangsters were the ones who built the second Beit HaMikdash and the second Commonwealth. Never underestimate the power of Jews, and of all things, the great leadership of the day was there in Eretz Yisrael, not in Bavel. By the way, of course, Ezra is very careful to tell us, I mean, my numbers may not be correct, there were, I think, 8,000 horses who came, and about 2,000 camels, and 4,000 donkeys. And of course, the Mefarsh will say, I mean, we have to know how many donkeys and how many horses came. Oh, do we have to know? Every horse that came on Aliyah, those were the Charlies of that day. You understand? Every horse and every donkey that came was a Charlie in potential. Yena Ferd went on Aliyah and left behind great people that did not come on Aliyah. That's why they're all listed. The Anshei Knesset HaGdolah have to now rebuild the structure of Jewish life, and these are the three. The three things that they did and that they said. They said you have to be careful in passing judgment. You have to establish students and yeshivas, and you have to make a fence around the law. We're going to take a closer look at the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. Number two is a Gemara in Yuma, unbelievable Gemara. Let's begin from where it's underlined. You have to know this Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi said, "Lomo nikra shmon anshei Knesset Hagadola. Why were they called the men of the great assembly?" And the answer is, "Shehechaziru atora liyoshna." They restored the crown of God's glory to its original luster. Hechaziru atora liyoshna. In what way did they restore the crown of God? Ota Moshe. Moshe, in Torah, in one of his prayers, he refers to God as Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Vahanora, that God is the one who is great, powerful, and awesome. That's how he described it. Along comes Yirmiyahu, who was present at Churban HaBayit, at the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and in chapter 32, Yirmiyahu prays, and he refers to God as Hakel Hagadol Hagibor, the great and the powerful. But he does not describe God as Nora, as awesome. Why doesn't he describe God as awesome? Because he says he sees that there are goyim in the Holy of Holies. Where is the fierceness and the awesomeness of God? He couldn't say it out of his mouth. So he went ahead and described God as Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor. Also, Yirmiyahu Yoma. Then came Jeremiah and said, Nochlim Mekarkerin Behecholol, strangers are croaking in his sanctuary. Ayein Na'orotav, where is the are the displays of his awesomeness? He didn't say Na'or. Also, Daniel afterwards came and he said, Nochlim Mishtabdim Bebonav Goyim. Goyim are enslaving his children. Where is the might of God? Where is Gvurotav? Where is his power? So he didn't say Gibor. In a prayer in chapter 9 of Daniel, refers to God as Akel. Hagadol does not refer to him as Gibor. Also in who? So here is where the men of the great assembly returned the crown to its original glory. They came and they composed the Shemone Esrei. And how did they describe God in the Shemone Esrei that they composed? They described him as Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Vahanora, exactly as Moshe did in Torah. They returned the crown to God. And they said, take a look at what they said. Why did they do it? Why did they reinstitute Norah and Gibor as descriptions of God? So they said, Adarabe, Zuhi Gvurat Gvurato, this is his great display of strength, Shekoveshet Yitzro, for he restrains his will. Shenotein Erech Apayim Rishoyim, in a sense, God controls himself from instantly destroying the enemies of his people. That takes a great deal of Gvurah. Sometimes we wonder, you know, we would like that he can pull another few rentissi jobs, you understand? All right? And then the Elohim, they also said, this, the awesomeness of God is, Shel Moloi Moro, Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if not for the awe of for the Holy One, blessed be He, Heich Uma Achat Yecholah Litkayim Bein HaUmot, how can one nation exist, one single nation, how do we exist and survive amongst the nations of the world? Do you understand? The Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, they said that, 2,500 years ago? How did they know that the Jews would survive? How did they know? That was a silly question I just asked. They knew. Of course they knew. We're the people of God. We are inextricably intertwined with God, and just as He is Nitz, He is eternal, so we are eternal. They weren't at all concerned about somebody coming later and say, hey, you said how does this one nation exist amongst the nations? Well, take a look, they don't exist. It'll never happen. It'll never happen. We're going to be a bone in the throats of the nations of the world until and after Mashiach comes. And what a bone in the throat we are. Alright? So now the Gemara asks, Daniel and Yirmiyahu, who did not describe God as Gibor and Nora, who gave them the right? Who gave them the right to change the text that had originally been established by Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu describes God as Okel, Agodol, Agibav, Anoro. Who gave Yirmiyahu and Daniel the right to change that? So the Gemara says, V'Rabbonon, the Gemara asks, Heichi Avdi Hachi, how did they act us? V'Akri Takanti, the Takin Moshe. They uprooted an institution that Moses instituted. Amar Rabbi Elazar, what a beautiful answer. What a beautiful answer. Because they know that God is truthful. Therefore, they didn't lie to him. What's Yirmiyahu supposed to say? His heart is breaking from the destruction of Beit HaMikdash and the suffering of a Jewish people. Hundreds of thousands of Jews have been killed in battle. He just doesn't feel the awesomeness of God. What's he supposed to say? Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Hanora. He doesn't mean it, and God knows he doesn't mean it, and he knows that God knows that he doesn't mean it. Truth. Truth. And therefore God appreciates truth. You don't feel it, Yirmiyahu? Good you didn't say it. One did not necessarily have to say that they saw the awesomeness of God in Auschwitz. It wasn't. Daniel, and by the way, Daniel is not looking at Jews who are being beaten and enslaved in Chutz Laretz. They're living in Bavel. And by the way, the living in Bavel wasn't bad. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is the one who says that the great mistake that was made by the Jewish people was that they didn't come back in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. Shelo yachlu, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi says, shelo yachlu lihiporeid. They were not able to separate themselves from inyoneihem umishkinoteihem. They couldn't separate themselves from their businesses and their homes. It was good in Bavel. I know that there are certain things I have to watch not to say in the United States while I'm on this Aliyah mission. I'm gonna watch myself. I'm gonna watch myself. Okay, all right. Daniel saw, just as Yechezkel, who was in Bavel, the very existence of Jews living in Galus, outside of Eretz Yisrael, is Chilul Hashem. Yechezkel says it clearly. So now the Gemara had asked, how did Yirmiyahu and Daniel not say what Moshe said? Because they had to say the truth. I want to ask another question. Yirmiyahu hadn't said Nora. Daniel hadn't said Gibor, right? Anshi Knesset HaGadolah come after Yirmiyahu and Daniel. And they say, take a look. God not getting angry and destroying the enemy, that's Gevurah. A nation that is able to exist in exile amongst the nations of the world and is not destroyed, that's awesomeness of God. Did Anshei Knesset HaGadolah have the ability to see more deeply than Yirmiyahu and Daniel did? Are we to say that what was so apparent to Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, Yirmiyahu didn't see it, Daniel didn't see it? Anshei Knesset HaGadolah greater than Yirmiyahu and Daniel? No, they're not greater than Yirmiyahu and Daniel. You know what makes the difference? The significant difference is the fact that they simply lived at a different period in time. Yirmiyahu is watching the Bet HaMikdash burn. Daniel is with Jews in exile. The Anshei Knesset HaGadolah are part of Shivas Zion, the return to Eretz Yisrael. Completely different generation. He sees things differently. They see things differently because they're living in a different period of time. And one has to be able to respond to the Rabbeinu Shleilem in terms of the period in which he lives. And in their period, they see the beginning of the fulfillment of prophecies. Yirmiyahu said, we'll return at the end of 70 years. Here we are, we're back. Yes. It's a very, very tenuous existence for the 42,000 and their horses. But they see the fulfillment of the prophets and they know this is gonna be it. We're back. And I gave one of my theory political sermons in Shul this Shabbos. I'm not going to go into that. You won't get out of here. But there was somebody, not a member of my shul. In other words, members of my shul, if they're leftists for some strange reason, they tolerate me, and they may be even, you know, they're masochists. They love to be punished by listening to me. The ones who are on the right, of course, eat it all up. And here is this fellow that just he can't agree with what I said, and he starts telling me what Gedolei Yisrael said 100 years ago and what Gedolei Yisrael said 200 years ago. So I told him you should know Zeh Klal Gadol. Like I once had somebody in my house, he came special to the United States, he wanted to talk to me, he'd heard some tapes of mine and he was moved by it, but how can I sort of celebrate Yom HaTzmaut? 1953, this secular government here wanted to take girls into the army. There was a great uproar in the Orthodox community. The Torah community fought it and won. So I walked in and I said, listen, he's sitting in my living room and I say, I want to tell you for sure, the Spanish-American War is over. Not only that, the First World War is over. You have to deal with problems in the context of their time. There were problems, they were dealt with, and you go further. I said, you cannot tell me what somebody said 100 years ago. Because I'll come back to you and tell you, 100 years ago, there were Rabbanim who were saying, don't go to America. America is Amareka, Buffalo is Barfela, Cleveland is Kelevland. And by the way, they were most probably right when they said it. They were right when they said it. America, you may think otherwise, but America hasn't been kind to the Jewish people. The greatest losses we have ever sustained in history have been in the last 100 years in the United States of America. A Jewish population that was 6 million in the 40s and the 50s should have been 20 million by now. Where did they go? And it's not 6 million, it's down to 4 point something or other. America hasn't been good to the Jewish people. Despite the fact we have lost... All right, just hang in over there. Four? Hasn't been good. What did I say? Oh, okay. I stand corrected. The United States has not been good for the Jewish people. America has been good to the Jewish people. Certainly, I have to say that after I read an article today in the Jerusalem Post. God bless Bush. The greatest friend we ever had in the White House. By the way, has there ever been any president who wasn't called the best friend we had in the White House? Carter was, and Clinton was, and Reagan was. Everyone in it was. I don't know. Oh, all right. Okay, listen. We're learning Torah. We're learning Torah over here. All right, calm down, everyone. Let's get back over here. What I'm saying is the following. You have to always understand what was said by great people within the context of the period in which they were living. What was right for Yirmiyahu and what was right for Daniel was no longer right for Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, because Anshei Knesset HaGedolah are living in a new period of Jewish history. They begin to see the fulfillment of all of the prophecies of Yirmiyahu. That's what they're seeing. I say, if there's confusion by the Jewish people today, and there's been a great deal of confusion, it's because we in our generation, we lived through Yirmiyahu, Daniel, and Anshei Knesset HaGedolah in a period that could even be condensed into 3 years. Between 1945 and 1948, we went from Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu is standing at Auschwitz and he cannot say Nora. Daniel sees 1.75 million Jews still in DP camps after the war with no place to go. And of course the great British Navy is standing across the coast of Eretz Yisrael to make sure that Atzebrach HaNegi doesn't make it home. And then all of a sudden comes Hey Eor. It's like sort of a replay of Yom HaShoah and Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaZmut. We've lived through all of these three periods in our lifetime. It creates a certain amount of confusion. But Anshei Knesset HaGedolah saw a new Jewish people dawning. There weren't many yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael when Ezra came. If you wanted to talk about how many kosher pizza places, there were more in Bavel than in Eretz Yisrael. It was a fledgling, weak community, and it's described in Ezra Nehemiah. There were enemies from within and enemies from without. There were Jews who were enemies. There were those who were living in Eretz Yisrael who were enemies. Don't ask. The economy was in shambles. All you have to do is read through the few chapters of Haggai and you'll see what a terrible, terrible period they went through economically. And you know what? They built the Second Commonwealth. And according to Rish Lakish, and according to the Marsha, the only reason why the second Churban came was because Jews didn't come from Bavel. Re'uyim hoyu la'asos lehem nisim, the Jewish people were worthy that miracles should be done for them in the days of Ezra, as had been done in the days of Yeshua. Ela shegorem ha'chet, sin caused that it didn't happen. And different Mepharshim, what was the sin? Marsha says the sin was that Pashut Jews didn't come. 600-700 years later, Reish Lakish is able to say to Rabbi Barbachana, Reish Lakish is living in Eretz Yisrael, he says to Rabbi Barbachana, Ela ha saninu l'chua bavloi, by God, I swear by God, I hate you Babylonians, shelo alitem b'mei Ezra, that you didn't come on Aliyah in the days of Ezra. There was a real condemnation. By the way, I'm not going to say that in America either. Don't worry. You know what Anshei Knesset HaGadolah are in the three statements that they make? They're laying the foundation for a new Jewish community. They are laying the foundations for a community that is going to thrive someday. And they were very wise. I understand Havei Metunim Badin. Be cautious in judgment. Don't pass judgments on Jewish history too hastily. We're finished. It's all over. It's a done deal. Oh, how many times I've heard that. How many times I've heard that. It's all over. Be careful. Be very, very careful. Don't be hasty. I remember when I came, it was 1998, of all things, in 1998, that I came to the United States to speak at a convention of rabbis, and all the wisdom at the time was Barak was getting ready to give the Golan back to give it away to Syria. Peres had been referring to it always as Harama HaSurit, the Syrian Heights. And I remember I came, I told you about my breakfast nook in Borough Park on 13th Avenue. Did I tell you? Yeah. What about the donut man? If you ever need a quick snack in Borough Park, 13th Avenue between 48th and 47th Street, there's the donut man. So, you know, usually I stay in Borough Park, I go over to the donut man, and there are two kibbutzes that I meet there all the time. They know everything that's wrong in Eretz Yisrael, everything that's wrong. And they throw it all at me, like I'm running the place. They should only know. Anyway, so I remember I came in then in 98, they're having their Gesunte breakfast, and, the Golan to done deal. Golan, now this guy, done deal. Done deal. By the way, I already was back there 2 years later, and I walked in one morning, and they're sitting there, and I say, it's a done deal. All right. But then I come to this rabbinic convention, and Rabbi stopped me as I come into the hall. I didn't even check in yet. To Golan, it's a done deal. I said, nah, what are you talking about? Rabbis without faith, it's not a done deal. Nothing is a done deal here yet. But all right, I'm going, I want to talk about the Mishnah. That's the Mishnah. Having the Tulim Bedin. Be very careful about any judgments. Everybody, I was at a wedding last night. I know you know everything about my life, and of course they question me about the he not could. So of course I don't have to tell you that. Of course I'm against it. Of course I'm against it. Regardless of what E.C. Leibler writes in the Jerusalem Post today, that all the right wingers should forget it. This is the great thing that ever happened. So I remember that E.C. Leibler also wrote a number of articles in favor of Oslo. What a great thing Oslo is. Anybody who was for Oslo, his opinion means nothing to me. You made a big mistake then. Be quiet now. All right. I got that out of my system. I'm going to feel better the rest of the day. The rest of the day. So somebody comes back at me and says, you know, my position was what I personally humbly believe is a Torah opinion. So he says to me, you know, I never heard you say a political opinion. Here, there's another side. Now, every one of you would laugh at something like this because you think I'm one shtick politics, right? And he, this fellow, saw the earnest. He says, you know, and you have to know that there's another side to it. There's a political side. So I told him, no, I don't have to see a political side. I have to see it through my particular view of expertise. I'll leave politics to the politicians who haven't made a decent decision in 30 years. We'll see. I tell you, don't tell this to anybody, but I long for Ben Gurion, who was able to tell the United Nations that the Tanakh is our claim to Eretz Israel. Nobody has said that since Ben Gurion. Since Ben Gurion, nobody has said it. I'm really going off on a. Toby? You can now ask me 3 questions during the course of the next year for that beautiful comment. It's all Torah, she says. Now listen carefully. I'm going to have to do the rest of this quickly, but I have to do it. There's an essay of Rav Soloveitchik that has always absolutely moved me. And every time I go back to it and I study it, it really does great things for me emotionally and religiously. Rav Soloveitchik says the following. Anshei Knesset HaGadola. By the way, I'm going to be using Rav Soloveitchik, who was talking about something completely different. I'm going to use him to explain this Mishnah. Anshei Knesset HaGadola are the ones who also composed all the brachos that we say. Before a glass of water, before an apple, before mitzvahs, Hashem kutshonu mitzosov, shakom niyabidvaro, borei priyawetz, this is all Anshei Knesset HaGadola. Because the world belongs to God. And we don't have a right to make use of it. Gemara says it. We don't have a right to use the world without, in a sense, redeeming it. Ransoming it from God. How do we ransom it? When I say, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, and I say, yes, this glass of water is yours and it's because of you that I can enjoy it. Then God says, okay, now you can use, you can drink my water. So he says, okay, so now we know why they composed all of these brachos. But there's something that we still have yet to ransom and redeem, something that's kodesh. We breathe, we live, we do, we act. Everything about us is a gift from the Rebbein Shleilam. What gives us the right to use this gift? So using a halachic approach, he says the following, something that's holy, and we are holy, we are the handiwork of God. Something that's holy can be redeemed and ransomed from Hegdish by a puta, a coin. God says, one coin is enough. The Rav says, there are 3 coins. 3 coins in the Jewish fountain. 3 coins. There are 3 aspects of God's personality that he wants us to adopt. The Rav often spoke about the idea of the great mitzvah of Torah is v'holachto bidrochov. You should go in the way of God. Follow in his footsteps, so to speak, just as he is merciful, you be merciful. As he is kind, you be kind. He visits the sick, you visit the sick. There are 3 aspects of his personality that the Jew has to adapt. And he describes the 3. The first one that he describes is what he calls tzimtzum. Tzimtzum is contraction. It happens to be one of the basic and fundamental ideas in Kabbalah and Chassidut, that for the world to come into being, God had to, in a sense, contract and reduce himself. Because Moli Kol Haaretz Kvodo, the whole world is full of his glory. The Zohar says, let atar panui minei, there is no place on the face of this earth that is empty of him. So how does the world come into being and take up the same space that God is? So he contracts himself. He shrinks himself, so to speak. He removes himself in order that a world should be able to come into being. Tzimtzum is not only the way in which God brought the world into being; it's also part of God's personality. There's a famous medrash. The medrash says that when God told Moshe Rabbeinu to build a mishkan, so Moshe Rabbeinu said, and the medrash uses the words that were later said by Shlomo HaMelech: "Hinei Hashemayim u'shmei Hashemayim lo yichalkelucha." The heavens and the heavens above the heavens cannot contain you. How is this little mishkan going to contain you? Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Moshe, it's not the way you think. I don't think the way you think. 20 pillars in Durham, 20 pillars in Tzafon, and 8 in the west. That humble building, Vani Bon, I come and I bring my divine presence down amongst you. I am able to contract myself. There is a beautiful Rashi in Shir HaShirim on the words Suga Bashoshanim, a hedge of roses. All of Halacha, all of Torah, all of Mitzvahs are in a sense the wall that controls and contains us. And Rashi gives the two great Mishalim. Chosin and Kala just got married. They come home after the wedding. Everything was done Kedasu Kedin. And then she turns to him and she says, I saw a speck of blood. There's nobody there. It's dark. They can do whatever they want. He turns away and she turns away. And they're not going to break that hedge of roses that they now erect between the two of them. It'll have to wait. Takes great strength. For that matter, so many of the mitzvahs that we perform take great strength. Because we are, in a sense, putting a wall of hedges around us. Rashi goes on to tell the medrash of a person is walking, it's a very hot summer day. He's walking someplace in Arizona. He sees a beautiful, beautiful fig. Oh, it looks so great. And he wants to stretch his hand out to take it. And then there's a voice that tells him, no, it's not yours. Not yours. He retracts his hand. He's not going to take it. He's going to wait. Who's the voice? Who's telling it to him? You know who's telling it to him? The Rebbe Yishmael was saying, Lo Tignov, no, it's not yours. Don't touch. An essential part of God's personality is the idea that he withdraws and he retracts and he makes a wall around him, around himself. That's exactly what the Jew has to be to survive as a former Yid. You have to know how to create those walls. You have to know what's right and what's wrong, what's also what's mutter, and I'm not going to cross that line. And when I'm not going to cross that line, that gives me a right to life, to breathe, to do, to act. I have ransomed all of my talents and my abilities from the Rebbe Yishmael. The Rebbe Yishmael says, yeah, now you can use it all. Enjoy it all. The Rav says, the second penny, the second coin. The second coin is the fact that God is humble and he's anonymous. Can you imagine? An artist paints a magnificent canvas. When he finishes the canvas, someplace down at the bottom, he signs Rembrandt, Picasso. The Rebbe Yishmael created a world. It's magnificent in its beauty. Grandeur. Majestic. But his name is not signed down at the bottom. If I can see, I'll know who it was. But he remains anonymous. He remains the silent one. He remains absolutely in his anonymity, the anonymity of God. Anonymity is a Jewish trait as well. And of all things, the Rav says, 120 members of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. What do we know about any of them? We may know about a handful, and even about that handful, we don't know the day they were born, we don't know the day they died. What do we know about them? We don't know what they wore, we don't know what they ate for breakfast. Not only we don't know, it's not important to us. Not only that, it wasn't important to them, because their purpose was to teach Torah. the best way for one to teach Torah is one who seeks anonymity and humility. Because if you have an ego and you let your ego get in the way of teaching Torah, you're not going to succeed with many students. The Rebbe is the one who has to see before himself, my task is the transmission of Torah. I don't count. Gedolei Yisrael were never interested in their biographies being known. It was never important, never significant. Gedolei Yisrael, they lived their lives and they passed through the scene. Anshei Knesset HaGedola did what they had to do and then they went on. That's it. It's not their person that's important. They didn't want to make sure that there would be great monuments that are going to be erected to them all over Eretz Yisrael. Here walked Reb Pliny ben Pliny. Never meant anything to them. Anonymity and humility is one of the faces of the Rebbein Shalom. Rav says, what do we know about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? What do we know? Well, about Rabbi Akiva we know a little bit, but not because he was interested that we know about it. By the way, for previous generations, that was okay. I think in our time, we do need the stories of Gedolei Yisrael. We need them. They don't need them. We need them. We need to be inspired. But they, for them, that was never important. Never important. So the Rav says that's the second aspect of God's personality that we have to adopt. Humility and anonymity. There's a third and a final face to God. And that final face to God is silence. And the ability to suffer in silence. The Jew doesn't ask questions for which he knows there are no answers, or he's not going to get the answer. Why did the Rebbein Shem do this? No. The Rav in a number of places wrote, the Jew never asks why. The Jew only asks, how am I going to grow from the experience? Do we want that God should ask us questions? Why did you do such and such? The idea of silence. Micha mocha bo'elim Hashem, who is among, like you amongst the gods? The Gemara says, Micha mocha bo'elim Hashem, who is like you amongst those who are silent? God is able to listen to people who reject him, who curse him, who defile him, who blaspheme him. And he remains silent. For us it takes great strength, but there are times at which that's exactly what we have to do. A Jew has to know when to remain silent. After great tragedies, we have to remain silent. Someday we'll understand. Like Aaron. Vayidom Aaron. Aaron remains silent. Great tragedy. Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the inauguration of the Mishkan, and his two children are struck down. You know what a Jew does at a moment of tragedy? He says, Yiskadal v'yiskadash Shemei Rabbah. Let the name of God be great and made holy. One of the examples that the Rav gives is something always troubling, and it troubled him to never a member of the family dies. It's Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach, you go to the cemetery, you come home, and you sit, shiver. An hour later, the halacha says, get up, get dressed. You're going to go to shul, and you're going to be mekayim v'samachto b'chagecha. Be happy in your yantif. What awesome strength that requires of the Jew. What awesome strength and silence. There's the famous story I heard it yet when I came to Yeshiva years ago from the Netziv of Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, Rosh Yeshiva Volozhin. It was just at the beginning of Shavuos, and in the yeshiva they were dancing, and somebody comes in with a telegram for the Netziv. He reads the telegram, he puts it into his pocket, and he goes back to singing, and for 2 days, Yantif, you know, the Samachta B'chagecha, they say Havdalah, and he bursts out into tears and collapses. He had received a telegram saying that his beloved younger sister had died. But Yantif is Yantif. Do you know what superhuman strength this requires? The ability to remain silent. The main part is going to come now. If these are the three faces of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you know what Anshei Knesset HaGadolah are doing? Anshei Knesset HaGadolah are the ones who returned the crown to its original glory. They did and they said and they composed precisely what Moshe Rabbeinu had said, HaKel, HaGadol, HaGibor, VaHanora. You know what Gadol means? When we talk about God, that He is Gadol. I have that Gemara here, number 3. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Bechol makom shata motzei gedulato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, wherever you see the greatness of God, shomata motzei amvenatanuto, that's where you see His humility. And He's going to bring three different places. Dovazer kosos batorah v'shoni v'nevim v'mishulosh b'ksuvim. You find it in Torah, the Nevim and Ksuvim. In Torah it says, Ki Hashem Elokeichem hu Elokei Elokim. Eloheiho Elohim. God, your God, is the God of all gods. Vadoni Adonim, the master of all masters. He's the greatest. Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, the Hanora. That's where Moshe Rabbeinu said it. Asher lo yisopon v'lo yikach shokad. He doesn't take graft or anything. And you know what it says afterwards? Uksiv pasrei, oseh mishpat yatom v'almana v'ohev ger latet lo lechem v'simla. This great, awesome God of all divinities. You know where He is? He's with the downtrodden. He's with the yasam. He's with the almana. He's with the ger. Wherever Torah talks about God being great and big, you know what you find there? His humility. And they're going to bring the same thing from the Nevi'im. Kicho amar rom v'nisa. This is from the Haftorah of Yom Kippur. So says the one who is high and raised. Shochinad v'kadoshimo morom v'kadosh eshkon. I live on high. And what does it say afterwards? Vezdaka u'shval ruach. I'm with the brokenhearted, the ones who are lowly in spirit, to give them life, to resuscitate and revive them. And so too it says in Ksuvim and in Nevi'im. So you know what Gadol means? Gadol describes God's humility. God's humility. What does one need humility for? To be able to transmit Torah, you need humility. You have to know that you're living in a world in order to be able to transmit from one generation to the next. Gadol, that was written by the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, that's expressed by Ha'amidu Talmidim Harbe. If you are going to adopt God's humility, then you will be able to make generations and generations of students. What's Gibor? Gibor, who's the Gibor? Kovesh Yitzchak, the one who was able to control himself. Who's able to control. Do you know what Kovesh means? Tzimtzum, to contract, to be able to withdraw. You know how that's expressed by Anshei Knesset HaGadolah? That's the second of God's faces. Asu siyag latorah. Make a siyag latorah. God is Nora, the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah said. What does Nora represent? I'll tell you what Nora represents. God's silence. Why? How do we know that God is the silent one? Because it says, Mikamocha Be'elam Hashem, who is like you amongst the silent ones? What does the rest of the pasuk say? Mikamocha Nedo Bakodesh, Nora Tehilot, Nora Tehilot. What's awesome about God is His ability to remain silent. A world rejects Him, and He remains silent. And do you know what's represented in remaining silent, Havei Metunim Padin. Before you pass judgment on history, just remain silent. Don't be hasty to explain what happens in history. Certainly not when you're talking about the history of the Jewish people. You have to approach it with a sense of, I don't know, time will tell. Anshei Knesset HaGedola that stood at the crossroads at the beginning of a second commonwealth knew that in order to establish that commonwealth, they're going to have to adopt the idea of Tzimtzum. They're going to have to adopt the idea of remaining silent. And they had to be the humble ones who are going to transmit Torah from generation to generation. So that the great accomplishment of Anshei Knesset HaGedola in having restored the crown to its great, to its original glory, Hakel HaGodol HaGibov HaNora, that exactly expresses Havei Metunim Adin, Hamidu Talmidim Harvei, Vasus Yog LaTorah, and all three of them represent the three faces of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's it.